Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited about this week's show because I am joined by a very special guest, one of the hosts of the Book Versus Movie podcast, Ms. Margo Donahue. How are you, Margo?
I'm well. Thrilled to be on the show with you.
Thank you very much. You have been so nice to have me on your show a couple of times. I was just on in October, and we talked about some of our favorite horror movies. Did you get any pushback on that at all?
Oh, no. And you know what? I have to tell you, I was so anxious about this election season. I don't know. It was one of those, one of those things, but
I don't
you
understand
recommended
why.
I don't know, right? I'm just anxious, I guess. I don't know. I'm a silly girl. So you recommended a few movies to me to watch over October, and you really scared the crap out of me with these choices, but in a good way. Like, it was good to get that energy out. So it was a great show. But I would say, though, I would probably switch out a couple of my choices after I did the show. I don't know how you felt, but a couple of them, I'm like, maybe I should have picked Children of the Corn versus Pet Sematary, for cheesy film.
That's always, anytime you do like a list episode, as soon as you're done, you're like, oh, shoot, why didn't I say this instead of, well.
The regret.
Where can everyone find you and your stuff online?
So it's Book Versus Movie Podcast. So the funny thing is that if you're looking us up in iTunes and Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, it's Book VS Dot Movie Podcast. So we abbreviated Versus. We didn't know what we were doing when we started the show like 2.5 years ago. It was just on a lark. But all of our social media, including the website and Twitter and Facebook, it's just Book Versus Movie. You just spell it all out. And if you want to send us an email, it's bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Very nice. All right. Right on. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about Big from 1988,
yes,
which was something that we had talked about doing a few months ago, and then kind of October got in the way. But now that we have that out of our system, we can talk Big. But of course, before we talk about Big, I will open the show the way that I always do and ask you, Margo, have you seen anything good lately?
Good? I don't know. But,
have you seen anything lately?
I have been seeing things lately. I have to say, since, I don't know when you're going to air this, but we've had the election since you and I've spoken last. And basically, I've been mainlining on Lifetime holiday movies, like the Lifetime channel, for the last week. And I'm not even kidding you. There's movies like My Christmas Dream, A Wish for Christmas, A Heavenly Christmas. There's Christmas Cookies. There's I'm Not Ready for Christmas. I'm not kidding you, dude. I mean, if you're looking for Lacey Chabert or Jamie King, there are
that's all. Where they are.
That's where they are. They're filming movies in Canada in spring there in the fall for weirdos like me.
Dean Cain in any of these movies?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's all about the women. They get like these really great female stars, or just like Lori Loughlin or Danica McKellar. She's there this year. But they get some okay dudes, but mainly it's the women that they invest in, because that's who's watching it.
And are they just marathoning these like already?
Oh, yeah. They do this. They start now like right after Halloween.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's like every Saturday night you get a new one. But then they have the channel, the Hallmark channel switches to Christmas movies only, like sometime in early November. And they just every night you can see Christmas movies. And like they're like from 2002, from the 1990s, right up to now. And it's just been, I can't take pleasure in things like Colbert Show or Daily Show or Samantha Bee right now. I kind of need to be distant from all that. And
sure.
So it's been great. And I love Christmas. I love Canada. So movies filmed in Canada make me happy. So that's just what I've been watching, like for the most part. But actually, I did see one movie in a theater this year, exactly one. And I don't know if you've seen it. It's called The Witness. And it's a documentary about Katie Genovese. And her brother filmed it. He's the director of it. She was the woman. Do you know the story? She was the one that was stabbed to death.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there were all these people. They claimed there was like 38 people who watched and nobody did anything. And basically that story's been disproven, but it's just her brother kind of going back. And it was so interesting just to see what like New York was like then and what investigation they did at the time to try to find out who did it. And they got the guy right away. But It's on Netflix right now, and I really recommend it. If you like true crime and documentaries, it's really interesting.
I saw that it had been added to Netflix, and I added it to my queue, but I haven't watched it yet. The story that no one helped has been disproven.
Oh yeah, because at the time, you know, the thing is that they kind of talk about is that what is a witness? Is it an eyewitness? Is it an ear witness? She was killed on this street where basically there was a bar at the corner, and it was a pretty rough and tumble kind of place. So sometimes people would hear things like, oh, it's just a fight, you know, a couple's argument, whatever. And they don't know, like, some of the people in the building were afraid. Like, some of them were from Europe, like fleeing the Nazis, and they were kind of scared of cops and wouldn't call the authorities if they heard something strange. People didn't know what they were seeing because it was a long distance away. It was the middle of the night. Yeah, there's all kinds of things that, like, yeah, but basically, yeah, like 38 people didn't look out their windows and watch women get stabbed to death. But that's the thing we were told had happened. Right. And it's really, I mean, her family had like so much old footage of her. Like, that's what's really incredible is that they had all this video of her from that time. They made family films, and she really comes to life. And it's really interesting. Her younger brother went to Vietnam. He lost his legs in Vietnam, you know, came back to America, got married, had kids, like had a successful life, but he always thought about her. And so I really recommend it. It's so, so interesting.
I will definitely check it out.
Yeah.
Have you watched the Amanda Knox documentary yet?
Yeah.
that's kind of where I was at too.
I like true crime, and but she bores me. I don't find her very interesting. I feel bad for the woman that was killed because nobody remembers her name, and I'm forgetting her name right now in her apartment. And just that whole case, it didn't thrill me.
I thought it was, you know, the documentary itself is kind of one-sided and seems, but I thought just in terms of an examination of journalism, I thought it was interesting that they had essentially that British reporter bragging about, you know, being like the worst, just writing these sensationalist headlines. Yes. And really was like wanting credit for it. I thought was fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Italian courts, like that, just like what passes for evidence there is just fascinating. But I find her really annoying. And she's like the main focus of the whole thing. She's kind of like, I'm a quirky, odd pixie girl that just happened to be, you know, her roommate was stabbed to death. And I just got, ugh.
Yeah. It's a crazy story. There were two documentaries that I wanted to talk about briefly. One is The 13th, which, have you watched that one yet?
No, it's on my list. Is it on Netflix or Amazon?
It is. Yeah, it's on Netflix. So it's Ava DuVernay's new documentary. I watched it pre-election. I almost would recommend waiting a little while because I think post-election, I think it would be really hard to watch.
Oh, God. Okay, good.
Because it essentially just kind of traces the number of African Americans in prison all the way back to kind of slavery almost, and, you know, kind of talks about the institutional racism that leads to a system in which, you know, so many primarily black men are put in prison. And it's horrifying and fascinating and sad and upsetting, and it will get you angry, and no one needs to feel even angrier right now, or maybe this is the time to feel, you know, especially angry. I don't know. But it's really,
it depends how I feel that day. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's really well done. And the other documentary that I want to talk about is a movie called Tickled. Are you familiar with this?
No.
Okay. So it's just now kind of making the rounds. I think it just showed up on like iTunes and VOD and stuff for rental. I don't want to give away too much. It starts with a journalist from New Zealand who kind of discovers this website devoted to something called competitive endurance tickling.
Oh, no.
Which is like 20 something men who essentially tie each other down and tickle one another, and, you know, to see who can last the longest. And he starts to go down this rabbit hole of this competitive endurance tickling. And the more he digs in, the weirder shit he finds out. And it's one of these documentaries that ends somewhere that's 100% different from where it started. And again, I won't say anything else because I don't want to give anything away, but it just goes in a completely different direction than you expect it to go. And I thought it was really fascinating. I mean, like 5 or 10 minutes into this, I turned to my wife and was like, what? Like, how is it going to get weirder than this? But it does. So
wait a second. It's men tickling each other?
It is men tickling each other, yes.
Straight guys?
Well, yes.
Oh, don't...
Yes. I believe many of them, I can't say that all of them are. A few of them are interviewed. And from what I know, I believe they are straight.
And I can get this on Netflix or is it
it's
on
not
Amazon?
On Netflix. You'd have to, I think, rent it off of iTunes or Amazon or something like that. It'll probably pop up on Netflix in like 4 or 5 months. But if you just can't wait to see Tickled, I believe you can rent it now.
See, I have a problem. I'm extremely ticklish and it's like plagued me my entire life. And it's not a fun thing to have. So I don't know. Will this be a trigger for me or?
It's a nightmare. I mean, like watching the clips of these videos, just somebody tying you down and tickling you is like, I cringe just thinking about it. That's not the bulk of the movie. Again, I don't want to say too much, but you could probably handle it, I think. I don't know.
I think I can handle it.
I think so.
I'm definitely curious. You know, I think somebody else has mentioned this to me as well, and it has a weird twist ending or something, but they won't say what it's about. So,
right.
And there are very few surprises left anymore. So I definitely want to check that out.
Yeah. I don't know why, you know, such a site exists. I don't know why tickling is a fetish. You know, I can't tell you how many times, like, we've seen something weird on TV, and my wife will turn to me and say, like, do you think someone's into that? And the answer is always yes, because everyone is into, no matter what weird thing you can think of, someone's into it. And I think tickling is probably more popular than even I can wrap my head around, because I don't get it.
I know a girl. I won't say her name. She probably won't listen to the show, but we were friends in college and she was obese. She was overweight. And she would, this is so embarrassing for her. Oh, she's not going to get this. Anyway,
no.
She would sell underwear to guys over eBay.
Yeah.
And she put her measurements on there and say, I've got these underpants and they've got blue polka dots and I'm going to sign my name on them. Who's going to bid on them? And like, she would pay her rent doing this.
Yeah.
Like there's somebody out there that gets that package and they're just like, wee, I scored. didn't give a shit. She just like,
they're just her underwear. She didn't even have to do
she
anything.
She doesn't care.
Right.
Yeah.
That was a whole subplot on one season of Orange is the New Black. Like,
oh, that's right. Orange is the New Black. Yeah. She years ago. Yeah. I guess there's a lid for every pot.
That's right. Oh, gosh. Part of me is like, no, I'm not going to because I don't want that showing up in my search history. But like pulling up on eBay, like what does a pair of worn underpants go for? But then, you know, the next time I'm on Facebook, like it's going to pop up on the side, like still interested. And then my life is a nightmare. So.
No, she would write like whole stories around the panties and take pictures of them. It was a whole thing.
Oh,
like, I don't know if she wore them or not, but yeah, she loved it in a weird way, like a powerful thing for her. You know?
Wow. Well, you need to get to work on that documentary. all right. So let's talk about Big. Now, this was your suggestion. We had said like, oh, what's a movie that maybe we could talk about? And you kind of threw out Big. So I guess I'll start the conversation just by asking, what was it about Big that kind of made you want to do a show on it?
Because I saw this in the movie theater. It came out in 1988 and I had a reaction to it. I loved it. I've seen it a few times over the years. But I recently resaw it. Saw it again with fresh eyes as an adult, you know, more of the age of the mom versus anybody else. And I had a whole other reaction to it. And I got really upset sometimes watching this movie. And it's so great in so many ways, but it's so weird in so many ways. And why it's successful, it's just crazy. And it's got to be like the Tom Hanks factor. Like he could just take the craziest premise and you just like him so much that you go along with it. And so I think that was part of it, like that Hanks magic in the 80s, like every single thing he did was successful. Was it good? Nah, sometimes, but
listen, who among us didn't see Turner and Hooch? It's a weird movie. So yeah, I saw this theatrically as well in 88 and must have seen it a bunch of times back then, mm-hmm. because as I know years have gone by since I last saw it, and so I was rewatching it for this podcast and was amazed at how familiar, like, this isn't a movie that I would say like, oh, I've seen Big so many times I can recite it, and yet every scene that came on I was like, yep, I know this, I remember this, I know exactly what's mm-hmm. coming, I know these lines. So right. for some reason I've seen Big a lot of times, and Tom Hanks obviously is the show, right? Like, mm-hmm. he's so great, and this really kind of represented almost a turning point. It was kind of this and then Philadelphia a couple years later that really kind of turns his career, because he had been starring in a bunch of kind of goofy comedies. You know, he'd done Turner mm-hmm. and Hooch and Dragnet and The Man with One Red Shoe and, you know, stuff.
The Money Pit.
Yeah. And Big comes along and kind of propels him almost to the A-list. This is the first time he gets nominated for a Best Actor Oscar. Mm-hmm. And he's delightful. He is great. But this is a crazy movie and does so many weird things that, again, right. I didn't question as a kid. And I was like, no. Now I watch it, I'm like, well, it's almost like they insisted that certain beats took place because they were kind of designing it for, you know, it's kind of a crowd pleaser. But some mm-hmm. of the things that are included in order to please the crowd, I think,
it's are crazy super weird. Logic turns, like crazy, crazy logic turns. I mean, it's a classic three act. You have to set up the problem. Then he has a while where he's sort of navigating things, and then he has to get out of it. I mean, it's like any movies like that. But it starts out with him. He's a kind of a short kid and he feels insecure. So he wants to be big. And so in order to make him big, he gets the ticket. He wakes up and he's big. And it's like, I laughed when I saw this in the movie theater, and I've laughed over the years, but I really watched it, like I said, with like fresh eyes and looking. I'm like, this is so fucking disturbing. This grown man in this little boy's underpants, he gets out of the bed, his pajamas are all ripped up. And then his mother sees him in the house and she thinks her boy's been kidnapped, or this is a molester that's after her son, right? Or has him. And he's like, no, mom, it's me. And I feel terrible for the mother. Like, she's got to be traumatized by this, right? And then he just takes off and nobody sees him. Nobody, neighbors see him. You know, he's just gone. And and that way we're like, okay, now he has to be in New York City and survive. It's like, wait a minute, does anybody call the FBI? Like, right. Does anybody get a sketch artist? I mean, she saw the guy. Like, well, and that he just walks around with his name around the head.
Oh, yeah, no, he's still just Josh Baskin.
He doesn't change his name.
Right. And has a high profile job at a corporate at a company in the city. Right, exactly.
He got a job with like no references. Like, I had a job in 1988. It was part-time at the mall, but trust me, I had to have references. I had to have two pieces of ID because you pay taxes. Like, this guy just shows up at an interview like, can you start tomorrow? Sure.
And how are they
paying
him?
And then like a week later, he's the vice president.
Right. Well, right. And how are they paying him with a fake Social Security number?
I don't know. They go to the bank and they get cash for it. I mean, yeah. It's so crazy. And it's just like I said, like, and then, oh God, this scene kills me. He decides that he's going to tell his mother's kidnapped. So he calls his mother and poses as one of the kidnappers and says, just want you to know, Josh is a great kid. We're not going to hurt him and we'll bring him home soon. And then she sings. He makes her. She says, tell me something. What? So he starts singing to her like this, the way we were. And she's crying. And I'm just like, ugh.
And I can't tell. Okay. Gross. So this was the first time, again, I hadn't watched it in years. And so now I'm watching it for the first time, probably since having kids, you know, and yeah. I'm feeling so terrible for the mom for the first time because, yeah, as I watched it, I was like, oh, sure, that's just how they explain his absence for 6 weeks. But, like, what an insane decision to explain the absence. Like, maybe they should have taken one more pass at the screenplay and tried to figure out, like, well, why would he disappear for 6 weeks? I don't know. But to make it like, oh, he's kidnapped And so this yes. mom is just in torment for apparently 6 weeks. But at a certain point, yeah, after he calls her and sings to her, which I think, again, is supposed to be kind of a laugh because we're laughing at him singing. Meanwhile, yeah. she's weeping because her son is missing.
Oh, and it's Mercedes Rule.
Right.
So who's a great actress who wins an Oscar in a couple of years for The Fisher King.
Right.
Like she's gutted. Like, she just looks destroyed. And like I said, there are no cops anywhere. Like, they should be canvassing the neighborhoods. There should be signs everywhere. You know, this is the 80s. They had stranger danger in the 80s. Kids were kidnapped and people made a big deal out of it. It's not like it was a casual thing. Like, it's a really strange hook for this whole thing. Like, and they just kind of shunted it aside. It's
yeah,
just,
because
you
then
know,
it just becomes...
Then
it just becomes like a plot point where... Every once in a while, he'll like write a letter or call, or the best friend will talk to the mom. And it's like, we're just checking in and reminding the audience, like, yeah, she still thinks he's kidnapped. Ha ha ha. But look at him
probably
play
piano. Molested.
Yeah, right.
I mean, my God, what is going through her mind? Who's helping this woman? Who's helping her? I mean, that's me now. I'm just like the 40-something woman. I'm yelling at the screen like, oh, my God, stop this. This is terrible. It's weird. And the screenplay was nominated for an Oscar.
I had forgotten. So I'm watching the opening credits and I had forgotten kind of what the pedigree was. Like, OK, so Penny Marshall directs it. It's her second movie. And this is the first movie I was looking on like Wikipedia a little while ago. This is the first movie ever directed by a woman to gross over $100 million. So even if I hated
right.
Big, which I don't, I'm happy that Big exists, right? Because it's a movie that kind of broke down a barrier.
Yep.
Barry Sonnenfeld is the cinematographer. Gary Ross was one of the co-writers. He would go on to write and direct Seabiscuit and Pleasantville, which I really love. And he did mm-hmm. the first Hunger Games movie. James L. Brooks is a producer. I mean, there's some major talent involved with this movie. And the notion that the screenplay was nominated for an Oscar, I think is very strange because I don't think it's a great screenplay. Like, again, I think the things that work are the performances more than
yep.
anything else. Because, yeah, if we're going to sit down and talk about the script, again, the fact that, like, the way that they write him out of the family for 6 weeks is with this weird kidnapping plot, but then we're supposed to be laughing and enjoying him playing with toys and stuff. It's just a weird mix. And, again, they were right to guess that the audience could overlook that, right? Like
right.
I said at the opening, like, it's written to be this crowd pleaser, and they make these weird choices, but audiences were willing to go along with it because the movie's a huge hit. So it's not that they were wrong, but as I'm watching it now, I was like, boy, I'm finding it really hard to forget the fact that at home there is a family that is ripped apart for fear that their son is never coming back to them.
I think so. Yeah, it's so strange. I mean, it's the power of the performances. I think Tom Hanks is great. I think Elizabeth Perkins is really good. I think
so
they're
good.
Really great together. And I love the kid who plays Jared Rushton, who plays
yeah.
Billy. He is so good. I love that scene where he says, again, and by the way, I'm 3 months older than you, asshole. He delivers that so well. Like, he's so good. And Robert Lagosha is really good. John Hurd's great. Who do I see? Kevin Meaney, R.I.P.
Yeah, R.I.P.
He has a scene. Yeah, he has a scene.
Apparently months ago, and I didn't remember doing this, I bought this movie on iTunes. I think it was like $5. And I was like, yeah,
oh.
I'll buy Big on iTunes for $5. So when I go to watch it for the podcast, I open it up and it gives me two options. It gives me the theatrical cut and an extended cut. And I was like, well, what is this extended cut of Big? So I press play. It's 2 hours and 10 minutes long, which is like death for a comedy.
Oh, yeah.
It is so long. And essentially, it's a lot of like, it's an interesting experiment in terms of like a testament to the importance of editing, because you watch it and it's not like this is Penny Marshall's preferred version. This is not a director's cut. This is just, hey, we put back in all the stuff we cut out, and it was all stuff they cut out for good reason. It's
right.
little moments here and there, scenes that go on a little bit longer. There's only a handful of extra scenes that are almost like standalone scenes. There's a scene with Robert Loggia and Tom Hanks in his office late at night, where Robert Loggia is like, but what am I going to do? Because once a kid turns 13, you can't sell him toys. All a 13-year-old boy wants is a 13-year-old girl. And it's like, that's the moment where Josh realizes that he has feelings for Elizabeth Perkins. I don't know why. So they took that scene out. There's a little bit more Elizabeth Perkins and some stuff that's like really problematic, including this whole subplot with her secretary or her assistant. And it's hinted at when we first meet her character, when she's talking about complaining about writing her married name. She writes it different ways. She hyphenates it sometimes. So that's in there. But then we meet the secretary, and then there's a scene later in the movie when, which we're going to have to get to, when Tom Hanks and Elizabeth Perkins sleep together. There's the smash cut to Tom Hanks, you know, with an extra bounce in his step because he lost his virginity at 13. Yeah. Right. But in this extended version, it also shows Elizabeth Perkins, who's also super cheery and brings in a gift basket to her secretary. Like, she's nice to this woman for the first time. And I was so bothered by that. I mean, I'm bothered by a lot of things, you know, surrounding that development, but the idea that, like, oh, she's lightened up. She just needed a dick, you know? Like,
she just needed to get laid. Right. Nobody really, really effed her right. So this, finally she had it done. I know. Well, she shows up in the first scene and, you know, they make her all arch, you know, like the suit and the hair and everything. And, like, she walks in like, my secretary sucks. And the guy, like, rolls his eyes at her like, whatever. Like, and any other guy walked in her office and said, hey, the third secretary sent me really sucks. They'd be like, oh, I'm sorry. I'll take care of that. You know, she's immediately treated like, oh, she's just bitchy and whatever. And throughout the movie, they give her this makeover. She wears soft. I know this as a woman. She's wearing softer and softer clothes. They're lighter colors. They're looser. They're a little more feminine. The hair comes down. You know, she's doing these little dreamy pauses when she looks at him. It's definitely about making her a little girl. And it's infantilizing her. And it's, and you know, she has to support Josh because he has the great ideas. It's like, she must have some good ideas. I mean, she's been in the business for, I mean, it's like, yeah, I know. It's, and they mentioned like all the men she slept with at the company. Like, why is that important? '80s.
Well, but also, I mean, when she is kind of throwing herself at him at the party, the implication is that it's because he's sort of on the rise. I mean, she has no real reason to be throwing herself at him except that he's attracting attention at the company. So it's very disturbing to suggest, like, this woman holds a position of power, but she might have gotten there by sleeping her way to the top.
Right, right. She's just super ambitious that way, and she doesn't have any other qualities until she meets a man who makes her finally act like a woman, basically. It's
who is 13.
And he's a child,
right?
By the way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, and they make him like he's 12, because I send the press materials, he's 12, and I'm like, ugh, but he turns 13. So we're supposed to be like, ah, oh, he's a man now. Okay. It's not so weird. But, you know, did you also read that Deborah Winger wanted to play this part for a while? And she said to Penny Marshall, why don't we just switch the genders? And she's like, no, I'm not going to have a 35-year-old man sleeping with a 13-year-old girl. Like, the audience is not going to go for that. It's not a Woody Allen film. Like, it's...
Which is 100% true. I mean, it's obviously like a crazy double standard, because why is the audience totally fine with the reverse? But I agree with her. I think had she tried to do that, this movie would not have been a hit at all.
No. And it also, let's go back, it's Tom Hanks. I mean, he's just so goddamn enjoyable. You know, he sells like certain scenes that I think a lesser actor just wouldn't be able to pull off.
But since we're at the sex scene, that's not where I planned on starting, but gosh.
You got really horny, right?
Why is that part of the movie? I don't know. So I'm watching it today. I'm watching this godforsaken extended cut, which, by the way, there's a whole extra thing where, like, and maybe it's implied in the theatrical cut, but I didn't have a chance to go back and rewatch that also, where Jared Rushton's character has a terrible home life. Is that in the theatrical? Oh my God.
No, tell me what happens.
We see a scene of him at home at the dinner table, and I believe Frances Fisher plays his mom, and she's just arguing with the father. They hate each other. Jared Rushton is the one serving everyone dinner. And then we don't see him with his family again, but anytime he's in his house, either on the phone or in his bedroom or whatever, there's all this audio of parents just fighting and screaming all the time. It's the weirdest, because it doesn't inform his character. It doesn't add anything to the movie. It's just, they just put that out and leave it there, that he has this garbage home life.
Well, he has to, because he can be in Times Square at 8:30 in the morning and no one gives a shit.
So is that...
He knows how to get there, for one thing. I lived in New York my whole life. I didn't know how to get to Times Square. I was 13, thankfully. But especially in 1988, it's so just... That, it's like he got... They... he was...
Is that how they reverse engineer it, though? Because I'm starting to think that, like, that's how they did this movie, where they wanted certain things to happen. We want him to turn into an adult, and disappear to New York for 6 weeks. Well, how do we do that? We'll pretend he's kidnapped. Well, we want his friend to be there with him. Well, how do we do that? Oh, he has a horrible home life, and nobody will know he's missing. Like, the way that they rationalize their plot devices is through real-life pain, which I find very strange. Yeah.
It's like, I keep going back to it because I remember, do you remember that show, A Current Affair?
Mm-hmm.
With Maury Povich? Like, they would have loved this story. A boy in his home, he goes to sleep, he wakes up, there's a man in there in his underwear, and his mother chases him out. Like, this story would have been everywhere. It makes no goddamn sense. And he keeps the name, and they have like one milk carton with Josh on it, but that's it.
Right.
It's just can happen to it. And then this is my thing. At the end of the movie, everyone's ruined. Everyone's ruined. No one gets out of this okay. Okay. Josh comes back. He had a great life as an adult for 6 weeks. He peaked at 12, basically. Peaked at 13. He comes back. He's never going to listen to a teacher. You know, girls are going to be like weird to him because he's like used to a woman. He's going to have all kinds of self-esteem issues. The mother's a mess. Right. I think it's just the baby sister that could probably get out of it okay. But I think, like, who? I mean, because Elizabeth also at the end, Elizabeth Perkins, like, she has these great scenes with Tom Hanks. And then I was just like, well, I guess you're a kid. I'll get over it.
Right.
I'll drive you home. Like, in a second.
And like, she saw an adult human that she fucked turn into a child before her eyes, which, by the way, again, movies I understand are about sort of reaching an emotional point, and they don't always have to follow logic, because the first time he turns into a kid, it happens overnight. The second time, it happens in the span of, I don't know, 30 minutes. But whatever. So yeah. She watches, you know, she does look down. She doesn't actually see him shrink,
right,
or whatever that would look like. Right. But she really takes it in stride. Like, she just kind of smiles to herself and was like, that kid I banged.
Well, do you remember, like, in when she was at her apartment with him, she's crying and screaming, she's panicked. She tries to stop him when he's getting the ticket again. He gets it. She's all like, "Oh my god, what's going on?" And then within a heartbeat, she's like, "Well, I guess you're just 13, and I'm just gonna drive you home." And then she's just like, kind of like, "Oh, that was fun. That was sweet." And he's running in the house, and the shoes fall off of him because there's no cops anywhere.
They've given up.
Everyone betrayed this woman. Mercedes Rule. I mean, I just feel so bad for her. What a shitty part.
All right. So to bring it back to the sex. No, that's fine. Because
back to the sex, please. Yes.
My memory of this movie was that Mercedes Rule was a single mom, and she's not. The father is in the picture. So I think I was confusing it with Last Action Hero, where Mercedes Rule is a single mom.
Right.
But the father is in the picture, but not really. We see him a little bit at the beginning, mostly just at the carnival. Every other scene we see is just of Mercedes Rule. She is sort of the dominant figure in Josh's life, right?
Right.
So is there anything weird, given that relationship, about the fact that he sleeps with a woman, you know, 20 to 25 years older than him? Like, there's something super Freudian going on here.
Very much so. They kind of look alike. You know, they resemble one another. Totally. Totally. And it's just, it's so like creepy, like a long, it's an extended scene. He's touching her breasts.
Right.
And
it gets a laugh because she turns the light off and he turns it back on. Ha-ha,
turns it back on. Because
he wants to see a boob because he's 12. Get it? So I'm rewatching.
And he knows how to kiss right away, by the way.
Oh, yeah. No, he mastered
that right away. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't pick up on any cues prior to that, and then all of a sudden.
No, he's a total doofus. But when he's ready to get laid for the first time, boom. He's Casanova.
So I'm watching it again, and there's this moment where I think it's right after he gets beat up by John Hurd, and she's helping him, you know, she's cleaning him up, and she leans over and just kisses him on the cheek. And I thought to myself, hey, what a different movie it would be if that's as far as it went. I'm fine with them perhaps developing feelings for one another. This idea of, gosh, what could have been, right? That in the back of Tom Hanks's mind, he knows, like, this isn't going to work, and maybe it shows some growth on her part that she's not immediately falling into bed with the next guy. That it's just sort of this thing where they clearly care about one another a lot, but that's as far as it goes. Why did audiences demand that they sleep together? It doesn't make it a better movie. I think it only makes it a worse movie.
I totally agree with you. It just makes it more icky and complicated. It should have been, you know, and that whole thing, like, she starts off like she's dabbing and she's like blowing in his ear and stuff like that, like a mommy would do.
Yes,
like
for kids. Yes.
She's doing that, right? And then she's sort of like, yeah, it's just, it's very, she's mothering him. And then it's like, it's, they're supposed to real, and she's maybe like, oh, this is what a woman does.
Right.
You know, right? And then it's like those little beats there. I know, I don't know why they, I don't know. It's always weird to me. Like, he's staying at her apartment all the time too. Like, and by the way, he has a fat apartment in Soho, like out of nowhere that he got.
That even in the 80s had to cost millions of dollars.
$5,000
right?
a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Well, he bought it? No, he has to rent. Well, who's
going
to rent it?
Oh, he's renting. Yeah, he's renting.
But without it, without his driver's license, without a bank account.
Without a social security number.
Not a social security number. I mean, it's just unreal. Yeah. And then he acts like a total, he's a 13-year-old that acts like a 10-year-old, but then he's met with a chance to have sex. I mean, maybe, I don't know. I've never been a 13-year-old boy, so I don't know. Maybe they're super immature. I don't know.
And this is my, I mean, I still enjoy the movie. Like, we're ripping it to pieces because it's so.
I still enjoy it too.
Right. It's super weird. But again, it coasts on its charm and Tom Hanks and Elizabeth Perkins, who I think has a really difficult role. Like, really difficult. Even from the outset, that scene where they're at the party together and he eats the beluga and he's spitting it out. And her reaction is one of, like, she's mortified but trying to help him. I mean, I think she's asked to play some emotions, particularly near the end, that are almost impossible. And I think she's really, really good in the movie.
But I totally agree with you.
I think it's very inconsistent from one scene to another in terms of, again, Tom Hanks is great at playing childlike, you know, he has this sense of childlike wonder. He dresses in a way that's unorthodox. He's playing with toys and that's all fine. But it's almost like from one scene to the next, the movie kind of rewrites what age he's playing based on the needs of that scene.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I was like, sometimes he acts like an 8-year-old. I mean, he acts like a really, really immature 13-year-old at times. Like, and then all of a sudden he's like, he acts like he's 35 and he's only been at this for like a few weeks, only a few weeks, like 6 weeks. And he's yelling at people at business meetings and stuff, like, what?
Well, he doesn't act like he's 35 until he gets laid. And then he starts wearing suits. And then he is 100% part of a corporate culture, because that's all it takes. Once you have sex, you become an adult and you are giving marketing presentations.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, he's at dinner parties and he is.
Oh, okay. The dinner party scene. Let's talk about that for a sec. Your kid comes in, you're having a dinner party with your adult friends. You just want to have a nice dinner. Your kid's going to be like, help me with my homework. You're like, you know what? I'll help you, Ed, when we're done with dinner.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
The kid, like, all of a sudden, a guy comes like, oh, I'll teach your kid. I'll show you. Cuckold this guy, you know, like.
But then we get that great moment where Elizabeth Perkins just looks at him lovingly. And the other wife, the kid's mom, are like, you're right. He is wonderful. Which makes me crazy when movies have to have other characters tell us how we're supposed to feel about characters. Yep. That makes me crazy. Like,
it puts a button on it that it doesn't need.
Right. We could get the idea that, like, wow, what a nice guy 13-year-old Josh Baskin is, without having a woman have to say he is wonderful.
He's a catch. We get it. He's already a nice guy. Yeah, I know. There's certain beats here. And But at the same time, it's enjoyable. I love the scene with the piano. I still think that works. I think that's like where they're playing chopsticks on the piano. F.A.O. Schwartz.
Yeah, no, and that has become like completely iconic. And I was rewatching it, and I'm like, well, why? Like, it's not a bad scene. I like it too, and I like the way it's staged. I like the fact that Penny Marshall kind of shoots it in so wide that you can see, you know, head to toe, like it's really them doing it.
Yeah,
we get the wide frame so we can see both of them. I mean, it's really, I like the way that it's staged, and it's certainly fun. And I understand that, again, its function is to ingratiate Josh with Robert Loggia so that he can climb the corporate ladder, which, again, is a weird thing about particularly 80s comedies. I was just talking about this because the last show we did was on, I think, the Addams Family. And I was talking about, why is it that in all these comedies that essentially at the center of it is some sort of capitalist desire? In the Addams Family, it's like fake Fester wants to get all of the money. It's always about like, how am I going to close this deal? How am I going to make this money, essentially? And Big is part of that also, that instead of just being about this kid who becomes an adult overnight and has to navigate certain adult things, it has to make him like this huge corporate success. And I understand that that's probably just part and parcel with coming out in the 80s, right? When that was kind of valued above everything else. And it, you know, the way that it's done is kind of fun. Like, oh, sure, he goes and works for a toy company and he has new insight because he's actually a kid. Like, I'm on board for all of that, but the message that it's sending is kind of weird to me.
Yeah, well, it's that a whole fetishizing of corporate culture in the 80s that happened. Remember The Secret of My Success? Did you ever talk about that movie?
Yes, I do. I have not talked about that movie.
if you ever want to talk fucked up values, you know, Secret of My Success is all of them. Like, Michael J. Fox is a monster in that movie, but he's Michael J. Fox, so we're all rooting for it. Do you remember? And the Night Ranger song?
Oh, of course I do. I could sing it right now, but I won't. he has sex with his aunt in that movie, doesn't he?
Yeah. And he just treats, what's her name?
Helen Slater.
Like, she's punished for having any kind of ambition or being competent. It's women are punished for being competent and
having
ambition.
But she's another one who's sleeping with a superior, no?
Well, she has to. That's how women make it. Didn't you know that? There's no other route. On your backs, ladies.
It's very strange. I'm watching Big today and I'm trying to figure out, like, so is part of this supposed to be almost like a satire of corporate culture? The idea that, like, a child succeeds where adults can't. But I think we're supposed to take it at face value. I think the movie is just saying, like, well, he has special insight because he's a kid. I don't think, because ultimately I think it is embracing capitalism and corporate culture. I don't think, I mean, John Hurd is like playing the kind of stereotypical 80s douchebag yuppie.
Right.
He would, you know, he's who James Spader was 10 years ago. But other than his character, I don't think there's anything, you know, I don't think the movie has anything to say negatively about this idea of corporate culture.
No, and he's supposed to be, the second he gets a little bit successful, like you said, he gets this like 5,000 square foot apartment and buys stuff and nobody thinks twice about it. Like, it's like, well, there you go. That's what you're supposed to aspire to. And then that's how he's considered to be a successful human being. And yeah, like I said, it was 80s. It was, all this stuff was fetishized.
So is it supposed to be like a, like a fantasy? I mean, obviously it's a fantasy in terms of it.
Mm-hmm.
It
is a fantasy.
No,
yeah.
It couldn't really happen. But is it? Are the screenwriters approaching it from a place of fantasy? In that, like, okay, if I were a kid who all of a sudden got to be an adult, what would be my dream come true? Well, I would get a job at a toy store a toy company where I just play with toys all day. And mm-hmm. I would get my own huge apartment where I could skateboard around, and I would have a soda machine in there that you don't even need quarters, and I would have a pinball machine.
A trampoline.
Right. And all
the trampoline scene.
I get all that stuff. There's an element of wish fulfillment, you know, in that. And where that breaks down is then like, oh, and I would fuck an adult woman. Like, that's where it kind of breaks down for me.
Yeah, totally, totally. And yeah, it's very strange. And then, like I said, Elizabeth Perkins, her part is so strange and so, like you said, she's so likable. Like, how she makes Susan likable is really challenging because she doesn't start off that way. And they do, like I said, a lot of that stereotypical career women, ambitious women, they're humorless until they get fucked right.
Right. Robert Loggia even has that scene with her at the party. Have a drink, have two. It's a party. Like,
yeah.
Lighten up, you career-minded woman.
Right. It's appalling. And I like Robert Loggia, by the way. I think he's very good in the part of the boss. He's nice for a CEO.
He is, yeah. Yeah, he is. What was I going to bring up? Oh, here's a question I have for you.
Go.
Going all the way back to the beginning of the movie. The movie wants to suggest young Josh Baskin wants to be big. And the way that this is visually represented on screen is he tries to ride this roller coaster in front of the girl who he likes. And he's told he's too short, which, first of all, would never happen because no height restriction is that high.
Oh, that high. It's like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wouldn't clear it. I mean, it's like half foot above him, but, and he's totally fine.
But here's where that visual representation doesn't work for me. That just has to do with I wish I was taller, right? This has nothing to do with I wish I was older, or am I misreading the movie and the wish that he was big is some weird, cruel twist of fate where the Zoltar machine is like, haha, fuck you, like an O. Henry story, and turns him into an adult instead of making him taller? Because I've never taken that away from it. I always assumed he wished that he was older and had that wish granted. But so why is it represented by a scene where he's just too short, not too young?
Oh, it's strange. Yeah. Like you said, and I think he just wanted to be a little bit taller, like just to ride the rides and maybe have a driver's license. So maybe be like 2 years older and just have a really weird growth spurt. And that's all he needed. Like why he needed to, like you said, what was the big lesson for him? I mean, home is a wonderful place. Boring. But because he turns on a dime with that, right? Like he has this really successful job. He really likes it. And all of a sudden he gets yelled at. He's like, oh, I want to be a kid again. And it's like, really? You want to leave that apartment and that great job and the sex and everything?
And that was again something I was watching it, which by the way, when I watched it today and he said something about being 30, I was like, oh my God, when I saw this movie, like 30 seemed
old,
right? Like, so oh, he was an adult and now like, oh, he's 30, he's still a kid.
Oh my God.
But I was watching it and I seriously was asking myself, like, would I go back or would I just like, I don't know. I mean, it's horrible because you miss your mom and you miss, you know, you just skipped 17 years of life. But at the same time, like, that's pretty hard to walk away from. You've really got it made.
He's really got it made. And they don't make the case for him wanting to go home. Not really. I mean, he's really close to his friend. And by the way, like I said, like their friendship is really great. And it's what represented really well on screen, Billy and Josh.
Yeah.
But that's not enough. I'm sorry. he's really successful in this other life. And then, by the way, he just goes back. Like, what happens to the job? What happens to the apartment? Everything? Like, all the people who cared about Josh as an adult? Does he just disappear on them?
Yeah. I mean, he walked out in the middle of a meeting.
Of the presentation, by the way.
For his.
And then she ran after him.
His thing that he designed that runs on a computer and only retails for $17.95.
And it has discs. You know, those little floppy discs he's using. How cute was that?
Oh, my goodness. And is that meant to be like, so is that the thing that kind of reminds him that he wants to go home? This idea of like you can choose different paths? Because again, that's, to me, it's a bit of a reach. You know what I mean? Like, I think I get what they were going for, but I don't think it really comes through. And maybe that's me being too hard on the movie because I guess I should be happy that they're not hitting us over the head with it.
I guess not, but for me, it's like I wish adult life were tougher for him. I wish there was some moment he's like, I'm really not mature enough for this. You know what I mean? This is too
Yes.
much. This is too intense. I need to be a kid.
Right.
He never really
Why
has
not,
that.
right? Why not have the point be
Right?
like, being an adult is hard. Cherish your youth.
Right.
And
Right.
instead,
It's
it's
not,
like
that's
being
not
an
the
adult
point.
is fucking awesome,
And
but I miss my mom, so.
I miss sharing my bedroom with my baby sister that cries all night. And I
Right.
miss, you know, being picked on and being short and
Yes.
you know, it's yeah, there's the, they don't do that. And it's so strange because it just like could take a couple of scenes to make that happen. Like if he was really stressed out at that job or something and realized like, oh shit, this is like the next 30, 40 years of my life. You know, maybe I want to, maybe, you know what, I want to be a kid again, really rethink what I want to do. Do I even want to be in a corporate world when I grow up?
Right.
Like, there's none of that. He just walks out of a meeting.
Right. And if he's able to convince Elizabeth Perkins that he's actually a 13-year-old who grew up overnight, why doesn't he, if he decides he wants to stay, like, go back home and try it again with the mom, show her the Zoltar card. Like, you could stay an adult and just say, like, listen, mom, this is me now. I'm not kidnapped, but I am going back to live in New York City because my life is sweet. So stop by and visit
Well,
me
he's not,
anytime.
because he's not going to get arrested by anybody because the cops and the FBI don't give a
Right.
shit. He
Right.
could walk in and out of that house. Are you kidding me? He runs out of the house like a banshee, like a bat out of hell with all that crap on him, you know, the sweatpants and the giant shirt barely like, you know, laced up on him, runs out. Nobody notices this. This is an empty neighborhood. He goes to the school and like hangs out in the gym waiting for, like there's nobody like monitoring these things. It's like, all it's so crazy,
Well, it is
like
from
all
a
this
it is
magical
from a
stuff. And
different time.
I guess I mean, I don't know. Yeah, that there's so many plot holes in this thing that it's just, but it's the charm of, you know, Tom
Right.
Hanks
So
and Patty
why does it
Marshall.
work? Because it is beloved. It was a huge hit when it
Yes.
came out. It is still beloved. I think you would be hard pressed to find somebody who's like, oh, Big, I hate that movie. Even though we've just made a case for
Right.
like, this movie's a mess. And yet both of us are still like, yeah, but I would watch it if it came on because it's really charming.
But there's somebody that like right now that's listening to us. They're like, what are they talking about? They're getting angry. And they're
Yes.
just kind of
Oh,
saying to
yeah.
themselves, you know what? I am going to go home and I'm going to fucking watch this tonight. And I'm going to write to them and prove them wrong. And they're going to be like, oh my God. Because just that first scene right away, like when she has to take the knife because she's afraid that he's going to grab
Right.
her or something.
Ha
Oh
ha
my
ha
God, that's
ha
terrible.
ha ha. Right.
Get it? She's terrified for her life.
And it's wrong for me to watch a movie and wish I was watching something else, right? That's not fair. You have to evaluate the movie that it is, not the movie you wish it was. But as I'm watching it today, minus all the weird extra footage, I love the movie that's just about quirky Tom Hanks, quirky youthful Tom Hanks, not actually a 12-year-old, but just a quirky youthful guy who gets a job for a toy company and kind of climbs the ranks because he's youthful, because he approaches his job differently, who falls in love with Elizabeth Perkins, who, you know, is put back in touch with her inner child, although we don't really get that outside of sort of the trampoline scene. We don't ever really get that moment. You had pointed out some much more subtle ways that they kind of infantilize her, but in terms of the impact that he has on her, it's implied that, you know, she lightens up or whatever, but it's not necessarily about her feeling more youthful. But, you know, that they are maybe this unlikely couple that falls in love. And, like, I'm on board for all that. And so I almost wish that, like, that was the movie. And let's just get rid of all this magic shit where he's a 12-year-old who became an adult. And let me just enjoy this story without, when they're having sex for the first time, thinking about, like, oh, I'm about to watch a rape and I should be happy.
I totally agree with you. I know. It's just crazy pants. It's just crazy. Yeah. Do you know that scene that drives me crazy too, watching it for the first time in a long time? Living in New York, as I have, there's that scene where they're in the limo and he's being a doofus, you know, playing
Yeah.
with the buttons and all that stuff. Okay. So they get out of that limo and they're leaning up and they're looking, and it's supposed to show like he's showing her to lighten up. Like, come on, ride out of the limo with me. We'll look at the city. I get so mad when I watch that scene because I'm like, Penny Marshall, turn the goddamn camera around. I want to see New York. 1988 New York. It doesn't exist anymore.
No.
I don't care about them anymore. I mean, like, there's certain things like that should be part of the magic. Like New York City should be part of the magic too.
And why the
that's
moment?
Kind of missing.
Why the? No, I completely agree. Why the moment when they go back to the carnival and they dance, and I think that's where they share their first kiss, which again he is the aggressor on, which maybe is to sort of assuage some of the filmmakers' feelings that, like, well, it shouldn't be her, even though she was throwing herself at him after the party. She is not the one who makes the move and kisses him. He kisses her, right? And then we get that shot, and I'm hoping, I assume this is in the theatrical cut, where they walk away and they completely miss the fact that there is a Zoltar machine.
Yes, yes, that's in there.
And is that, yeah, is that like, oh, again, cruel irony, he missed it? Or is that he knew that it was there and is making the choice to remain an adult? It has to be the first one,
you
right?
You know, I think it has to be the first one too, but I wonder now that you brought it up, maybe it is the second one. I wonder, I don't know.
But I feel like the
moment, I don't know, it's a weird choice.
The moment that Billy finds the Zoltar machine, Josh decides, like, oh, I gotta go and be a kid again. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so if he knew that,
well,
one was,
but he hadn't had sex yet.
That's true. He was like, I gotta hold on just a little bit longer. I think tonight is my night.
Got a couple of more dates and this is going to be it. Got to lock the deal.
Oh, it's weird. And again, I love Tom Hanks so much. And this is one of my favorite
Monsters?
Of his. Well, right. This is one of my favorite of his performances because it's so much of what is great about Tom Hanks. You know, the the Tom Hanks that we get now is a very different Tom Hanks, and I still love Tom Hanks, but like Captain Phillips, Sully, Robert Langdon, Tom Hanks is much more,
he's
like
older.
I'm America's reliable dad, right?
Yep.
And so I miss the Tom Hanks that was just like sweet and goofy and funny and loose and just so much fun to watch on screen.
Did you ever watch Bosom Buddies?
I was obsessed with Bosom Buddies as a kid.
Peter Scolari can do no wrong by me. Both of them.
The two people I wanted to be as a child were Tom Hanks on Bosom Buddies and Michael J. Fox on Family Ties. Like, or Marty McFly.
I
but
totally
like,
get
I wanted
that.
To be Tom Hanks and Michael J. Fox. That was my goal in life. I think one of my first crushes was on Donna Dixon on Bosom Buddies. But again, I think that was just because of her relationship to Tom Hanks. It was
she's
like,
also beautiful and she's married to Dan Aykroyd now. So she's cool.
Absolutely. But I think it was like, well, if Tom Hanks likes her, I should
Sunny.
Probably like her too. Like,
yeah. No, I get you. I get that.
Yeah. No, I've been way on board for Tom Hanks since really as early as I can remember.
Yeah, same here. Like I said, he does no wrong by me. Even if I don't like the movie, I always like him.
Yeah, and this was I was watching it today and kind of marveling. I feel like in the 80s, he had a reputation for being unconventionally handsome. That he wasn't like the guy that women thought was hot. But he had a certain thing about him. I don't know. I was watching him today. I'm like, he is empirically very handsome.
Oh, he's very handsome. He's very handsome, but he's also like, he's not stuck up, you know, about it. You know, he has other qualities that he works on as well, which is nice to see. Somebody who, like, coasts on their looks is not fun.
Right.
You know?
Right.
He has humor and he has intelligence and he kind of like dances around. Like the way he moves his body is like hilarious. Like he puts all this energy into it. And I feel like in the right way, he's great.
And yet, and again, you know, his performance is measured in such a way in Big that like, as it progresses, he gets rid of a lot of those things again, particularly post sex when he's like, I'm now a functioning adult. I wear suits and go to dinner parties and I'm not like goofy and fun anymore. And I don't understand that transition. And I don't know what we are meant to take away from that transition, because again, to your point, I don't think it's about that moment when being a grown up stops being fun. I don't think it's about like, well, hey, this was fun, but now I'm wearing suits and giving pitches. And like, he seems to still be enjoying it. And in fact, even tells Billy, like, hey, I'm on the phone. This is important. And he's making the choice to do this instead of be there for his friend. So again, the movie is sending this message. Like, I'm reminded of, this is a conversation that comes up a lot of times with, I know it had just come up with like Doctor Strange, the Dances with Wolves, The Last Samurai. There's a specific type of film where an outsider enters a community, whether it's the Native Americans in Dances with Wolves or the Japanese in The Last Samurai or these, you know, mystical magicians in Doctor Strange or whatever. It's usually a white man enters this community and then proceeds to be the best of all of them. You know, he's the one who masters it. He's Kevin Costner is not a Native American, and yet by the end of the movie, he's the best Native American.
Oh,
you know?
I remember.
Tom Hanks is the best samurai. And to an extent, that's almost the story of Big, where it's like this 13-year-old enters the adult world and becomes the best adult.
And absolutely.
That's very strange to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's not cynical and he's not ironic and he's not, you know, cunning, you know, he's just himself. And that's, and that, but you kind of do have to be a little cynical to make it as an adult. You do have to have some smarts and some toughness if you're going to make it as an adult. But we kind of fetishize how innocent kids are and how great it is to be that innocent. And it's like, not really. It doesn't prepare you for, I don't know. I am a hardcore New Yorker, dude. I mean,
so we just come off like the most bitter people who are, I feel like all I've done is nitpick this movie, but I don't think that they are nitpicks. I mean, I think these are, some of these are like fundamental questions that are like, if you actually stop and think about some of the things that are going on in this movie, like, what are we to make of this? And again, maybe it's just a different time, 1988. Yeah. Maybe it was more innocent. People were more willing to roll with certain things. It functions so much like a crowd pleaser. It gives you all the beats that you want. It doesn't leave you thinking that everyone is damaged. You know, Josh gets to go be a kid again. He's happy. Elizabeth Perkins says, I'll be fine,
even though
like, she has to somehow deal with the fact that, like, wait, we had sex and you're 13. The mom is happy to see him home.
And also, who's going to be her boyfriend after that?
Right. Right.
Who's he going to date after Josh?
he's friends with Billy again.
Right?
So by the end of the movie, everything is back to status quo and everyone is fine and everyone is happy. And so we leave the theater feeling good and the Chopsticks plays on the soundtrack. And oh, that movie was so sweet and fun. And Tom Hanks,
charming.
He's so charming. Right.
Yeah.
But it is this weird thing where like you start to pull it apart and you're like, oh, there is some like a dark underbelly to this movie that I feel like we're ignoring because it is so fun and cute, you know?
Yeah. It's just, it's the undercurrent is very disturbing. And I think 28 years later, it's fine to peel back that layer and examine it a little bit. You know, I think it's totally, I think it's a good thing to think back and like, wow, I'm glad we don't make these kind of movies anymore, to be honest with you. But do you remember, I used to love body switching movies. They were making a bunch of them at the time in the 80s. Vice Versa.
Oh, yeah. Like Father, Like Son.
I'm 17 Again.
18 Again.
Or 17 Again with George Burns.
Well, 17 Again came. Burns. Yeah, 18 Again was Charlie Schlatter.
Oh, that's
and
Matthew
George
Perry.
Burns.
I don't count that one.
No. Well, that came way later. That was like the second wave with like 13 going on 30, which is essentially just a remake of Big.
Yeah.
And also, it's been a while since I saw 13 going on 30. I don't think it's as disturbing.
She doesn't have sex with a guy.
Oh, then it's not as disturbing.
No. She sees that she has a boyfriend, but he's naked in her apartment, and she freaks out and she leaves. And then he's like, "Boy, you have some issues," and he kind of leaves the picture.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, they reversed it, but no, she didn't have sex with him.
Okay. So there was a second wave. I can't remember if I really liked body switching movies. Like, I remember really liking Vice Versa.
Love Vice Versa.
Yeah. But I think
that's
part of my
great movie.
Part of my love of that was like, I really liked Fred Savage because of the Wonder Years. And also because I went to see it at the movies on a school night. And like, so that's such a happy memory. Like, it's a Tuesday and I'm at the movies.
I'm gonna see Judge Reinhold act
exactly,
like a teenager.
Right. But I don't know if I have much use for the other body switching movies. And Big technically isn't even a body switching movie.
No, but it is. I mean,
but
that's the funny thing about it. It's not technically a body switching movie, but it does follow that trope.
Right.
You know, he's adjusting to a new body and a new life, and everybody treats him differently. He looks different. He has to behave differently. Did you ever see Freaky Friday?
You know what?
Or is that too girly
I
for
literally
you?
Have never seen Freaky Friday, either the original or the remake. I've never seen any Freaky Friday. And
it's
not
cute.
Because it's girly. I've just never seen it.
It's really cute. It's really, really cute. You should try to check it out sometime. It's a good compare and contrast kind of thing, because Jodie Foster is just she was so cute when she was a kid. She's great in the part.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I've always enjoyed it. I feel like it just follows that in a weird way. I like time travel movies and body switching movies.
I love time travel movies.
Oh, love them.
Do you have a favorite time travel movie?
I'm trying to think. Well, of course, Back to the Future.
Right. Let me ask this question. What's the worst time travel movie that you still love?
Oh, okay. You go first. Do you have one?
I don't know if it's even bad. I have no critical compass for it, but I really like the movie Deja Vu with Denzel Washington.
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, you got to see it.
Oh.
And by the way, the fact that I even introduced it as a time travel movie kind of spoils something about the movie, but you should definitely see it.
Peggy Sue Got Married.
Oh, okay. Is
I
that
like
your
that
favorite, or is that the worst that you still love?
No. Actually, that is one of my favorites.
Okay.
I can't think of a bad one. I really like the concept.
Yeah.
Like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Of course.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find it fun.
Listen, Big is sort of a time travel movie, right? He jumps 17 years in the future.
Yeah, there you go. That's one way to look at it.
But not exactly, because it's still 1988.
But no. It's 1988. Right. But it's got weird elements of both that I like.
Right.
And it has Tom Hanks. And Tom Hanks in the 80s, I just loved his movies in the 80s. He's just so goddamn enjoyable.
Yeah, because there's a shift then in the 90s when he is now, you know, once he makes Philadelphia and all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, he's also a great dramatic actor. And he is great in that movie. But there is a shift then to where now he's mostly doing more dramatic movies. And a lot of them are still good, but it does lose a lot of like fun Tom Hanks.
I think he lost his fun Tom Hanks when he became a director. That Thing You Do. Like, I feel like he got very serious after that.
Maybe. Although That Thing You Do is like one of the most fun movies ever made.
I know. But I feel like he all of a sudden he was, you know, I'm a director and an actor now. And I think he got a little more serious.
Did you see the second movie?
Because I can't think of any, like, which one?
The second movie he directed, Larry Crown.
Oh, God. God, what a piece of shit.
Yeah.
That's a movie I hate watch. That's a movie I can actually hate watch. Like, I will sit there and watch it and go, argh! It makes me so angry because it's so stupid.
But
I like Tom Hanks.
It broke my heart. Yeah.
What do you mean? Why did it break your heart? I mean,
because I love Tom Hanks and because I'm such a fan of That Thing You Do that when it was like, oh, he's directing another movie, I was so excited about it. And then it's like, it's bad in almost every way. Are you there?
No. Yeah, you broke up on me. It's bad almost.
Oh, I said it's bad in almost every way.
Oh, absolutely. In casting and everything. Like, Julia Roberts is the most nasty person alive in that movie. And she's playing like a community school teacher. And she has like the super fancy outfit. I went to community college for a little bit. They don't dress like that. The whole thing, like, he just gives up the house and like that's the, you know, and doesn't take any responsibility for it. And like that was supposed to show his growth or something. That's a really weird movie.
But again, she is nasty and miserable and unpleasant. Who her icy exterior is chipped away by the love of a man.
We're sensing a pattern. Here we go. Tom Hanks, like, he chisels away at bitchy women. Boom, boom, boom. She's fixed now.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom Hanks. Anyway, thank you so much for talking about this movie. It was really fun. I wasn't even sure how we would come at the movie, but we had a ton to say about it. So thank you.
Absolutely. I as soon as I saw it, I was like, I want to talk about this with somebody. And you just popped in my head. Like, I wondered if he would, and I knew you would get into it. I knew you would do the job. So yeah, this was so much fun. I feel like I got a lot off my chest. You know, I feel a little bit cleansed now. I had some anger and I was disturbed a little bit by some things, but now that I've talked about it with you, I feel better.
Good. You're ready to settle in and watch some Lifetime Christmas movies.
Oh, dude, you have no idea.
Can you remind everyone again where to find you online and your social media and all that stuff?
Yeah, sure. So, we're at bookversusmovie.com. That's our old-timey website. And at bookversusmovie on Facebook and Twitter, just spell it all out. And if you're looking for a podcast, like I said before, on iTunes and Stitcher, it's bookvs.moviepodcast. Somebody had to point that out to me. So that's where you'll find us. And thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Everyone subscribe to Book Versus Movie. It's really great and fun. Their most recent episode was on Fight Club, and I haven't yet had a chance to listen to it, but I'm excited to hear it.
I think we did a good job with it. We had, you know, that's another case. It was 4 days after the election, and Margaret and I, we were just tweeting back and forth as we watched the movie again. I'm like, ugh, more toxic male, you know, energy. It kind of colored our view probably, but I'd be interested to hear what you think of it.
Yeah, I'm excited. And as always, you can find us at fthismovie.net or we're on Facebook and Twitter at fthismovie, or you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Margo, please come back on the show very soon. That would be awesome.
Anytime, dude. Trust me. Anytime.
All right. Excellent. Thank you guys very much. And we will talk to you next week.